The first time I loved a tornado. Of course, she talked incessantly. I loved the wind within her and mistook her noise moving across me to mean I was with her. Does chaos have a home? Does a shipwreck know it's sunk? I assume an order to her tunnel, a logic to the path her breath follows. I should have guessed from the hummingbirds which fell from her dress, 1, 2, 3, 4, that she wanted love. I should have known, based on her inability to be alone, that she'd suck me right up into the middle of her, twist me tight until my bones popped like soda pop lids, like a shoe hitting pavement, like rain on anything man-made. The trees lost their fingers, the street signs wind-chimed themselves without strings, slapping each other down the block like keys on a janitor ring. Pop quiz, sharks don't circle to attack, they're trying to see an object clearly. How to see anything when spinning at 300 miles per hour? She hummed counterclockwise, pulling us toward the earth. I forgot my name in the hinge of her hip, tore through the whole city before I dropped out dirty and new and thirsty.
Caitlin, do you think of yourself as a poet first or a photographer, or are they hand in hand?
Definitely a poet writer first before photography, because I've been doing poetry. I've been writing poetry since fifth grade.
Oh, okay.
And I've only been doing photography in a serious capacity since about 2011.
Anything in the works for publication?
There's always a manuscript. I have two forthcoming poems that are coming out. One is coming out in Third Coast. And
nice.
The other one is, I can't remember off the top of my head currently.
I was thinking books, though.
I'm working on a poetry manuscript, and I just completed a book of fiction, actually.
Really?
Last year, yeah.
Oh, okay. And here I was thinking poet.
Yeah.
Tell a little more about the fiction thing.
Well, I don't want to give away too much, but it's young adult genre.
Okay.
And it's actually, I don't write fiction. Generally, like, I don't think of myself as a fiction writer, but I had this story come to me about 5 years ago, and I think last March I decided, like, well, are you going to write it or not? And I decided to write it, and I finished the first draft in December.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That first draft.
Yeah, it's like 87,000 words.
Yeah, that first draft is hard. I'm still getting beat up by mine. You know, just,
yeah.
I keep going back and editing, and I can't.
You can always find something to edit.
Always. Oh, so we're not getting a hint what it's about.
No. Very tight-lipped about it.
Oh, boy. All right. I've got to think your family had an influence, surely, on your artistic endeavors more than one. Although when I read your bio, it's interesting that you say you were raised by a community of writers.
My mom, Gail Martin, is a poet. I also grew up three houses away from Susan Ramsey and right around the block from Donna Eflund. And I took intermediate poetry workshop with Dice Seuss when I was in high school.
You're not kidding, a community of poets. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and my high school English teacher, Tisha Pankop, was hugely instrumental in helping me fall in love with poetry and writing in general. So I had a lot of mostly women in my life who were great at that.
So when did photography come in?
So I was living on the Texas-Mexican border in...
Ooh, we could talk about that.
We could. I moved down there in 2010, came home in 2012. I was actually working for the Texas Poet Laureate at the time, Jan Seal, and I was taking classes at Pan Am and trying to figure out other sources of income, and I was speaking with a woman who named Linda, who said, like, you're... images are great. Like, have you thought about, you know, creating a business or going, being more serious and intentional about your photography? And, you know, my initial response was no. I had taken a class actually in 2009, I believe, at the KIA where you had to have a DSLR camera. And so I went out and bought one, and...
And they're not cheap. That's
no, no. It was actually like the first real tax return I ever had. So I got an unexpected amount of money back from the government. And so I went out and bought an expensive camera.
Well, I wonder then how you think about technology and photography. I enjoy photography, too. And I find that over the recent years, and very quickly, the changes are coming on each other. Technology has really made a difference in how photography is done. And I think it's opened the door for more photographers. And I wonder your perspective on this. It affects the photography, people using filters and photoshopping and that kind of a thing. What are your thoughts on all
that? Yeah, you know, I wish that I had been trained in film, because I feel like, and maybe this is a false perception on my part, but I feel like people who are trained in film have a more in-depth, comprehensive understanding of the basics of photography and an appreciation for more of the art side of it as opposed to the commercial side. Mm-hmm. I feel like digital photography is really steeped in commercialization, and that was one of the things that I first bumped into when I was in the Valley, was the Rio Grande Valley, was where I lived, was a lot of the photographers that I was sort of looking at who were working there, it was really heavily photoshopped work. And that has never appealed to me as an aesthetic. And so the niche that I sort of carved for myself was, you're going to look like how you look. When I take your photo, you're not going to look plastic or like you're not a person or something. One, because I don't have those Photoshop skills, but two, I don't want to sit on my computer editing for hours and days or, you know, however long that takes to create an image that looks like it belongs in a magazine.
I always think the beauty is in the eccentricities of an image, especially when you're talking people. It's those wrinkles.
Yeah.
It's those things that are not quite symmetrical that I think are the most interesting.
Well, and it's really those moments where the photographer connects with their subject. And you can tell images where somebody's uncomfortable, you know, because they look awkward. They look like they don't want to have their photo taken. And so that's something that I've really tried to do as well, is like, you know, most people are like, I hate having my photo taken. I'm like, okay, you and everyone else, you know, I've never had a customer who's been like, I love this, you know, like that's what I would like. And so you really have to work to create a comfortable atmosphere for their self to come through, you know, otherwise you just have this awkward photo.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
During my career, I've been in on photo shoots, and some photographers are really good at putting people at ease, and some just get out there and start shooting.
Yeah.
Do you have a technique to get people to show their essence?
No.
You're one of those, just take it out and shoot.
No, I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe this is wrong, but I think people generally feel at ease around me. I think I have a pretty welcoming presence, unless there's
that
some type
be.
Of conflict.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I generally try to make it like we're learning together. You know, I've seen a lot of photographers who are impatient right off the bat, and I don't charge by the hour, so I feel like that immediately, it's not like, okay, we have 30 minutes to get it right. Yeah, I think that helps.
What's your favorite topic, or you have a business, what do you usually do? Weddings, events, or?
I don't do weddings. Weddings are a lot of work and very stressful. I would do weddings, but I don't generally market myself that way, because I work full time and I don't have time for that generally. I do a lot of family portraits. I've done some maternity shoots and couples photography, doing the gala for Outfront. So I've done some event photography as well.
When you're setting up a shot, or maybe you're not setting it up, maybe you're out there taking a walk and you just see it, what do you look for? What makes a great photo?
I started taking photos, and pretty soon after that, I delved into the business aspect of it. And I realized pretty quickly, like, I don't like taking photos for other people, because then I don't want to take photos for myself. And so I had to take a step back and kind of find balance, because when you're looking at photography as, is this an image that's marketable? You know, that changes the art. And so I had to work into my schedule like ways to continue to take shots that were interesting to me and not necessarily even ever going to be shared with other people. But nature shots for me, like I'm not super good at landscape photography, but I tend to focus on like a really small element, and then I like a strong depth of field behind whatever is the subject. That's just the images that draw me usually. Same with portraits. I'm always looking for contrasting elements too. I mean, it's the same with poetry.
That's true.
You want to have some tension in your photo in the same way that you want to have tension in a poem.
I was wondering, too, if with your writing and your photography, if you've ever thought of blending the two. You might have a poem that's born from that image or vice versa. I could imagine you would have this wonderful poetry collection, hey, with an image and a poem.
Yeah, that actually never occurred to me.
Really?
I mean,
really?
Not with my own images. Like,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people do, I can't pronounce it ever, but the ekphrastic poetry where it's you're inspired by an image. I don't know. I can never pronounce that word. But and I've actually judged a poetry competition with that because the judge thought or the
and
person organizing it
never occurred
it thought
to you
that,
to do this yourself.
I mean, like I guess my images aren't always that inspiring. I don't know that my brain, it's like I work.
Wow, you said that out loud.
I love photography. I don't love it as much as I love writing. I love photography, but it's not something that lights a passion in me when I'm doing it. When I capture a great image, I'm like, yes, I feel happy about that. I feel proud. And I think maybe part of that is because I haven't been doing it as long. Maybe I'm still taking high school level photos or something, you know, like people talk about how their high school poems are keep them away forever. Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot of crossover for me between the two. I'm certainly inspired by other people's images, but for me, my poems often start internally. And so it's not coming from an outside inspiration. Not always. I mean, usually ends up out there, or it starts out there and ends up in here, you know.
Wasn't there a moment in time that you had a pairing done with your mom, with her poetry at the KIA?
Yeah, I've done a few community stuff like that. The one that...
I saw something online.
There was...
Curated by Elaine Seaman,
I believe. At the KIA, I can't remember the name of the exhibit, but I had a very abstract painting, and it was called The Last Poets. We were given something from their collection, and we had to write a poem in response to that. That was a challenging exercise, actually. The one that I liked that was less challenging was we did with Portage District Library. We presented a poem, and then an artist created something off of our piece. And so I have a poem called Cardiology, and I can't remember the artist's name, but he created this brilliant, like, digitally created painting that I ended up purchasing. I have it in my living room, which is cool to have, like, you know, something
and
of
I
your
hope
own
you have
art.
Your poem printed out.
Oh yeah, it's right next
you
to
do.
It. It's right
yes.
next to it, yeah.
Perfect. Think about that book. I would like to see that.
I will.
Importance of lighting, which, you know, you could apply that to poetry too, what that light shines on in both photography and a poem. I've always thought light is what makes it or breaks it.
I love your photos. I think your photos are better than mine.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, lighting is key. You know, I often will book, you know, a new client, and they'll be like, so how about noon? And I'm like, no, like,
no
that's the most boring time of day ever. Or, you know, people will be like, oh, well, I hear it's going to be overcast. And I'm like, great, that sounds like awesome lighting.
Exactly,
know?
Yeah.
So I think it's, people don't always understand the different elements involved in setting that up. I don't do studio photography. I generally shoot outside, so I feel like I know how to avoid shadows on people's faces and whatever, but I'm not...
Unless they're interesting ones.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I would love to develop that skill set of, like, setting up intentionally interesting lighting for people, but I think I think that's harder to do outside than when you're controlling
outside,
all the lighting.
I found that... they call it the golden hour, but I've always found that it's more like a golden minute.
Like at dusk?
As the sun is going down, there's this perfect golden
That's my
bronze.
Favorite time of day. In the fall.
You can have a scene and photograph this incredible photograph and look at it at noon the next day, and it's like, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and then sometimes it's just lifting the camera up an inch, you know, and
there
getting like the sun edge of the sun or a burst or something that comes over like an object in the background. Like, oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And how does that work with poetry?
With poetry, I feel it's more like leaving some breathing room, some white space, some space in the margins, or however you want to say that.
Is it sometimes about what you don't say?
Yeah, like writing around a subject. I think for me, it's also about eliminating words that aren't necessary. You know, like that's kind of the way that I do the crossover that I have between photography and poetry is getting rid of the excessive like clutter in the background or something that's going to be visually distracting from what your point is. You know, and I know there's styles of poetry that don't work that way, but mine is, at least it strives to be precise.
Oh, that definitely applies to both art forms,
yeah.
Poetry as well as photography. Yeah. Well, I asked you what makes a great photograph. What makes a great poem?
Yeah. I mean, I would say strong voice for sure. Also, like I was saying earlier, having tension, you know, like if your poem is merely description, that doesn't personally interest me because reading, even in prose, like I'm not interested in description as much. Like I discovered this while writing the fiction book. I have to go back and describe each scene because all of it is like in this nebulous setting, you know, because that type of writing, you know, I don't like it. It's more difficult. And so when that's done well in a poem, I feel impressed. But I like a poem that has really good internal rhyme, not like obnoxiously so, but subtle, like slant rhymes. I love slant rhymes.
Yeah.
And I love poems that are about things that are meaningful. And obviously, like, you know, when you're writing poetry, obviously everything's meaningful in some way. But I like the poems that I've written best that are about subjects I would consider important. And I would put heartbreak under that category because we can't escape our hearts ever.
Yeah, yeah. Any kind of social justice type themes that tend to work in,
yeah,
into your...
Yeah, I have in the collection, the manuscript that I'm working on right now, I have a number of persona poems. And one of those it's called Hotline. And it's about, I worked as a sexual assault counselor for a number of years at the YWCA here in town. And
wow, tough job.
Yeah, it was. And it's kind of like collecting all of those stories that still rattle around in my head and putting them into a straight narrative about, it's like a woman who calls the hotline and it's just her talking. And I wrote that poem one night when I couldn't sleep and had insomnia. So I just like wrote it at 3 a.m. And I have another poem in there, another persona poem that came from listening to my friend Chris Womhoff talk about an action he took going into one of Enbridge's pipelines after the oil spill here in the Kalamazoo River. Just listening to him talk about it, I was like, I have to put this in a different form that, you know, because he's so passionate and I wanted to really capture that in a different way other than our conversation with each other. I think it's just important to remember that art is not an empty category. There's been a lot of things that I've caught in conversation about art being used as resistance to fascism or art is the savior, you know, or whatever. And that always gives me pause because the aesthetic is also how fascism can take root, you know, in the stereotypes and caricatures that we create about each other. I never want to put art on a pedestal, I guess, is something that I keep in mind because images and poems can be used to uplift and they can also be used to degrade and dehumanize.
That's true. It's powerful, all how you use it. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Caitlin.
Yeah.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
You too. Thank you.